Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We have one of the region's finest chefs in the studio today to answer your questions about food and fine dining. Chef Michael Ballin is here. After graduating from Oberlin College, Michael Ballin moved to New York City, where he began cooking at Lavin's Restaurant in 1984. Michael moved to the Berkshires to become chef at the Williamsville Inn in West Stockbridge. But when the inn was sold, he moved back to the city. And then he came back to the Berkshires in 1989 to open the Castle Street Cafe, where he has been based ever since. He has just published a book about a year ago or so called A Chef's Life, Farm to Table Cooking in the Berkshires. It's not a recipe book per se, but rather a collection of memoirs of a cooking life in the region. So let's get to know Chef Ballin. He's no stranger to these airwaves. Give us a call now, 800-348-2551. 800-248-2551. Don't call that number. Call this one, 800-348-2551. You can also email the show, voxpop@wamc.org, or tweet us at WAMCVoxPop. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Chef Michael Ballin, welcome back to the airwaves.
Nice to be here.
It's been a while since you've been on this program. I think Alan did the last one.
He did.
And I got to say, I love the book. Thank you for bringing the book for me to look at, A Chef's Life, Farm to Table Cooking in the Berkshires. Now, there are a lot of cookbooks out there.
There are.
This is not exactly a cookbook.
Not really. I mean, it does have some recipes, but it's mostly a reflection on my experience of being a chef and what it's like to run a restaurant and how chefs get inspiration from farmers and how chefs get interact with farmers. So it's that whole aspect. And then there are selected recipes which sort of illustrate some points.
Now, you know, as I say, you've been on these airwaves just about as long as I've been here. I've been here 18 years, and you make appearances from time to time. And one of the things I can remember going, my memory is very, very poor, but one of the things that I can remember going way back is that you were a farm-to-table dude long before this was a hip thing.
Yeah, actually, one of the things that I include in the book is the original menu from 1989, and the original menu had two sides. The front side was a listing of the menu offerings, and the back side was an acknowledgement of all the farmers and purveyors who allowed us to make great food. So we were buying locally raised bread and flour and goat cheese and things like that. So all that sort of predated the invention of the phrase farm to table.
Yeah. Well, I mean, every chef who is big into this, and most of the chefs on this program, feel buying local is really important.
Absolutely.
And I always ask the question, is this a solidarity, a political move, or is this for taste? And they always say both.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's also an economic statement of keeping money in the community. And it's also a personal thing. I mean, I like to know who grows my food and who makes it. So I buy bread from Berkshire Mountain Bakery, which
is really good,
unbelievable,
by the way. Yeah.
Whole grain bread. And I know the woman who makes the goat cheese, and I know the people who grow my salad greens. And it's not anonymous. All these places have names and places and identities, and I visited the farms. And, you know, that's not the same as going shopping at a big supermarket.
No, absolutely not. The book is A Chef's Life, by Chef Michael Ballin, Farm to Table Cooking in the Berkshires. The chapter titles alone are interesting, and here's one that you can explain perhaps to me: farmers, foragers, and deconstruction.
Well, there are sort of two big food movements in this country right now, at least among sort of top chefs. The one we've alluded to a little bit, which probably your listeners are maybe more familiar with, is this whole farm-to-table movement.
Sure.
And around here in the Hudson Valley in New England, farm-to-table is huge. There is also another movement which is a little more esoteric. It was based on this famous Spanish chef who had a restaurant in northern Spain. And what he called his technique, he didn't call it cooking. He called it molecular deconstruction.
Well, wait, that doesn't sound too appetizing.
Well, it involved the use of some very high-tech cooking techniques like freeze-drying things, using centrifuges to extract liquids out of ingredients. The goal was to physically transform ingredients to serve you things in basically unrecognizable ways. And
to what end?
I refer to that as mad scientist cuisine. And Fernand Andrea, who has since closed his restaurant, but he was the guy who really made this famous, and he had a couple of disciples in New York City and elsewhere. He would close his restaurant for 6 months of the year, and then they had this kitchen with a lot of really extraordinary high-tech ingredients. And, you know, they used to freeze things in liquid nitrogen so that when you drop the droplet of this ingredient into a warm liquid, it would kind of shatter in front of you. And you know, the whole impulse to cook like that, completely opposite from what I think most of your guests and who are chefs have been on here who are interested in connecting with the land and being related. It's Star Trek food.
It's a strange thing. Is it performance art or is it? Does it taste good?
You know what? I haven't eaten too much of that stuff. I have eaten a little of it. Some of this food where the menu will say something like, halibut, horseradish, kumquat, tarragon. And presumably, those ingredients are listed in decreasing importance in the dish. But you know, I've had food where the dish comes out and there's a plate and there's a micro dot, like the size of a dot on a printed piece of paper, and that's the ingredient on the plate. And my point of view is, wait a minute, you got to be kidding me. You think this significantly adds or transforms a dish? I mean, when you start using tweezers to cook, you lose me.
Yeah, I know, electron microscope shouldn't be necessary.
Yeah, and pipettes and other things. And, there's look at the list of chemical additives that are used in this. Some of them are natural, but, ground up seaweed powders and some other things that are collagens and that thickening sauces. It's not stewed chicken like your grandmother made. And frankly, I find that a lot more appealing.
I'm with you. Our guest today is Chef Michael Ballin of the Castle Street Cafe, right in the Berkshires. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. I ask this, not every time, but often, how much of cooking, and you've been in the game a long time, is it science or is it art?
It's a lot of things. I mean, so much of cooking is making people feel welcome and making people feel like when they walk in and look at your menu that, hey, so many things look good. I'm not sure what to order because I tell you what, if you're with a group of people, say, you order this because I want a taste of that and I'll order something else and we can share. It's a sense of making people feel at home. And I've always... that's always been my ideal in cooking, is to be the kind of neighborhood place where someone can walk in and you're walking through and say, hey, Ray, how you doing? And you get a seat. And I contrast that with the kind of high-end exclusive restaurant where, you walk in and...
You're on eggshells.
You show up at the door and they go, I don't know, we'll see if we have a table for you.
Yeah.
And that's never been an appealing, restaurant model for me at all.
In the 25 years or so, and we'll get to the phone calls in a minute. Hang in there, Sean from Kinderhook. You'll be first at 800-348-2551. In the 25 years or so since you've opened Castle Street Cafe, how has the business, the industry evolved, and how have you evolved?
Well, one of the things I talk about in the book is, when I first opened up, technology has changed all of us. So when I was first cooking, I would have someone show up at the back door with a box of zucchini and say, hey, you want to buy some zucchini?
Yeah.
And now the really organized farmers who I deal with send out email lists twice a week saying, I've got 100 pounds of zucchini, 20 pounds of carrots, 5 pounds of this. This is the price for that. How much do you want? I'm delivering on this day. And it's gotten so much more organized. It used to be just kind of catchers catch can. And,
right.
And now... the organized farms are really, really disciplined, and they're also competitive because I've got emails coming in from half a dozen purveyors who are all trying to sell me stuff, and that's how I figure out what to do.
It's great for you.
Absolutely.
And it's great if you want to vary your menu according to what is fresh and
right.
What is there, but how do you keep loyalty if you have all these people to all the time?
I actually try and spread it around. I'll just give you an example. On Route 22 in Stephantown, there is the Berry Patch Farm, who is one of my local favorite farms, and when it's zucchini blossom season, as it was last year for quite a long time, Dale shows up with the most gigantic, humongous, perfect zucchini blossoms, which we dip in sort of beer batter and deep fry, and they come out crispy.
Deep-fried zucchini blossoms?
And served with a sort of Vietnamese dipping sauce. It's really fantastic.
You didn't bring those, did you?
It doesn't travel too well.
That's too bad. Our guest is Chef Michael Ballin. His book is A Chef's Life, Farm-to-Table Cooking in the Berkshires. Of course, Chef Ballin is the proprietor at the Castle Street Cafe. That's in Great Barrington, right?
It is.
And we welcome your calls at 800-348-2551. Before we take our first break and then get to the calls, what did you brought some stuff.
Well,
today.
I thought one thing we might talk about today is cooking for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a restaurateur, and, Valentine's Day, like Mother's Day, is one of those days of the year where certain number of people feel like they got to take somebody out for dinner. And, you know, I'm happy to oblige, and I'm sure we'll be jam-packed. But I also think it's nice to cook at home on Valentine's Day. And some level, not leaving your own house and staying in your pajamas is a lot more romantic than getting dressed up and going out to a restaurant.
Depending on your pajamas, of course. All right, we'll find out what you brought, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551. Chef Michael Ballin is here, and I promise we'll get to the phones after this.
Support for WAMC comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preservenys.org. Sutter Meats, King Street, Northampton, providing fresh, local, pasture-raised beef, pork, and lamb. Additional house-made items include rotisserie chickens, bone broths, bacon jam, and handmade sausages, suttermeats.com. And Fidelis Care, offering coverage through New York State of Health with open enrollment through January 31st, 2016, fideliscare.org. And Bread Alone Bakery, Kingston, celebrating 32 years of certified organic handcrafted breads with a new space open for breakfast, brunch, lunch, or a late snack on Route 9 West between Kingston and Saugerties, breadalone.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. Ray Graff here. Number to call is 800-348-2551. Chef Michael Ballin is our guest. Chef Ballin of the Castle Street Cafe in Great Barrington. And he brought some food. So before we get to the phones, and Sean and Kinderhook, you're being amazingly patient. We'll get to you in just a moment. But I see strawberries with chocolate on them. You can't lose.
Well, they're kind of two foods which are traditionally regarded as being aphrodisiacs. Chocolate is one.
Yeah.
And the other is oysters.
You brought oysters?
I did.
Chocolate covered oysters?
No chocolate covered oysters.
Okay, good, good.
You know, oysters are not the kind of thing that I would recommend someone try to eat at home. Opening up an oyster with an oyster knife is a dangerous.
Is it really?
Yes. If you don't know what you're doing.
I've never done that.
Yes. Well, I don't suggest you start on Valentine's Day.
Okay, fair enough.
Because even a trained chef can have some difficulty doing that, and if you're not careful, you will put an oyster knife through your hand.
Okay, well, that's not a very romantic
however,
thing.
However, oysters become much more cooperative when they're cooked.
Uh-huh.
And so do clams, which are also in this.
Wow.
So what I thought might make a nice, and there are a couple of things to think about when you're planning a Valentine's Day dinner at home. One is, what does the person you're cooking for like to eat? I mean, if the person you're cooking for doesn't eat seafood,
it doesn't
make sense to cook seafood.
Right.
And also doesn't make sense to try and attempt something that's wildly out of your worldview or skill level. But at the same time, simple is good. It doesn't need to be complicated, and you don't need to make a lot of food. So what I made here today is another virtue for Valentine's Day food is something that doesn't require a lot of time in the kitchen or that can be prepared in advance. So I have a saffron shellfish sampler, which is made with tomatoes, garlic, sliced fennel, which makes it a little more. Fennel is that vegetable that kind of looks like celery, but it has the anise taste.
Yeah.
And then I simmered with white wine, garlic, tomatoes, and I put. You can really put any combination of shellfish in there. What I have today has mussels, clams,
wow.
Oysters, and shrimp. However, if for any reason you don't eat or don't like shellfish, you could basically do the same dish with salmon, striped bass, monkfish,
beautiful,
bronzino. And none of this takes a long time to cook. It's light. It's sort of there's nothing less romantic than being stuffed from a overly full dinner.
Yeah, that's true.
So this is designed to be sort of aromatic, lively. I did put a tiny bit of crushed red pepper flakes in this because you want to awaken the senses and have your mouth be lively and light.
Yeah.
And then when you're done with that, chocolate. Now, I mean, so many people go out and buy chocolate, and there's innumerable places to do that. It's not hard to make chocolate-covered strawberries or chocolate-covered chocolate truffles. Both of those are really easy. They have just two ingredients, really, and it's the kind of thing where kids can even help out making.
All right, chocolate-covered strawberries, I could see that I might be able to pull that off. I'm looking at the truffles. I don't have a prayer.
Oh, no, the truffles have two ingredients. Good quality chocolate, three ingredients actually. Good quality chocolate, heavy cream, and they're going to melt those together and let that chill, and then it sort of becomes the kind of consistency of mud. And then you have this nice, rich chocolate ball, which I roll into little sort of marble-sized pieces, and then just toss them a little cocoa powder so you get that little cocoa covering. I mean, yes, you could go to a good quality chocolate shop and buy those things, but I think there's something nice about making it yourself and going through the effort. I mean, anybody can make a dinner reservation. Anybody can walk into a chocolate store. But taking the time to prepare things yourselves, to me, what really shows love.
Unless you screw it up. And then your sweetheart says, well, boy, you're terrible at
right,
this.
Right, no, for people like that, they do make restaurants.
Well, see, that's the thing. All right, let's, you know what? The minute I mentioned the food, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, came in. She's preparing the food. So let's take a call. Sean and Kinderhook. My God, Sean, you've been very patient. You're on.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
Yeah, Chef, I have a question. I was searching for a basic beef lo mein recipe online. I was on the Food Network, and surprisingly enough, it says page not found. I searched everywhere, high and low, online, and I cannot freaking find a recipe for a basic lo mein and beef recipe. Could you help me out?
It's not hard, actually. If you email me at my email address, info@castlestreetcafe.com, I can send you one. We actually have a kind of variation on lo mein on the menu right now.
That's noodles, right?
Yeah, it's noodles. It's we're using soba noodles instead of sort of thin noodles, but it's soba noodles dressed with sesame oil, soy sauce, and then this is not quite traditional, but there's an Indonesian form of soy sauce, which I like a lot. It's kind of thick and syrupy, and has a very
right.
sweet taste. So I just saute some vegetables, but you could put in shrimp or chicken or pork or whatever you're using, and it's not hard to make.
Right. Now, what kind of vegetables?
I like bok choy. I like red peppers. I like shiitake mushrooms, broccoli florets, yep. some snow peas or asparagus tips. I mean, any or all of those.
So improvisable.
Yeah.
Yeah, or bean sprouts or
yes,
whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it could be basically whatever kind of vegetable you want. Now, what I was thinking was maybe I was going to like, I like the thickness part of it, maybe just like a little hoisin sauce
right.
and then thin it down with the soy. And,
right, that would be great.
Sesame oil. Right.
You're on target.
Yeah, I've been cooking for, you know, a long time. I'm a foodie myself.
It sounds like it.
So, hey, yeah, Sean, perfect. Thanks a lot. Well, appreciate you waiting. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Have a great day, guys.
You too. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. What do you think of this, Jess? This is, the shrimp. This is the saffron on the shrimp,
yeah.
the yellow?
Yeah.
Can I try a bite?
And, yeah, absolutely. And that, I mean, you know, I suppose if your partner really loved meatloaf and thought that meatloaf was the epitome of high eating, you should make that person meatloaf. But
wow.
for most people, they're probably looking for something a little more glamorous on Valentine's Day. And You know, saffron is a pricey ingredient, but a tiny little bit goes a long way. It doesn't take a lot. And as soon as you add saffron to a dish, it somehow makes everything more special.
Oh boy,
so
that's delicious. But, I mean, don't be talking bad about meatloaf.
I love meatloaf. We serve it at the restaurant. I have no, I'm not embarrassed to serve meatloaf at all.
All right, and before we get to the next call at 800-348-2551, Chef Ballin, tell us the secret of your meatloaf.
A lot of eggs.
Really?
Yes.
How many?
Well, for 5 pounds of ground beef, I put about a dozen eggs in.
You're kidding me.
No, I don't.
Do you put the bacon on the bottom? My grandmother used to do that.
No bacon, a little breadcrumbs, some sautéed onions, that's herbs and spices, but eggs keep it moist.
Ah, all right, back to the phones we go. Paul in Canada Lake. Paul, you're on with Chef Michael Ballin.
Hey, nice. Thank you very much, Chef. I have a question regarding sourcing food in the restaurant. I know that up here in the Adirondacks, and, you know, I'm a big foodie myself and been working in restaurants or worked in restaurants as a kid up in Saratoga. Now I'm a chef by avocation, if not vocation. But when my neighbor gets a deer up here, you know, I can have a dinner party and serve venison and, you know, don't have to worry about the health authorities looking over my shoulder. I know that in the restaurant business, it's a little bit trickier sourcing food. You have to use approved vendors, et cetera. So my question was, what hurdles do you have to go through or what challenges do you face trying to find farm-to-table stuff that you can actually use in the restaurant?
Well, with meat, it's definitely more difficult, and I'll give you an example. I have a source for organic local chicken that's raised in New York State, which I like a lot. However, it's certified for sale to restaurants in New York State, but it is not certified across borders in Massachusetts, where my restaurant is. So as much as I like this chicken, I could potentially be fined for serving. I'm not able to buy that. But in the vegetable world, there's an overwhelming supply and quantity. I mean, every year in the Berkshires, where I am, it seems like there's another farmer set up. I mean, I'm basically offered for sale more stuff than I can buy because there's only so much I can use. And, you know, this organization that connects restaurateurs and chefs and farmers called Berkshire Grown has been really phenomenal about educating all involved to how to use this stuff. And I'll just give an example. Just recently, and serendipity also just plays a role. I just had someone show up at my back door a few weeks ago who was about to be raising sort of these heirloom duck breeds, and in answer to the question which came first, the chicken or the egg, the answer is the egg, because he's got duck eggs to sell right now and will be selling duck meat sometime next summer.
Wow.
So we've been serving a warm spinach salad with a poached duck egg on top, which is really phenomenal. The duck egg is really rich. It's delicious. That you know, the yolk on a locally raised egg is just so yellow and bright. So I would say at this point, particularly in the vegetable world, the supply is overwhelming right now.
Okay, thank you. Reservation for two on...
No. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. Number to call here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Chef Michael Ballin is our guest. Now, you've been running the Castle Street Cafe for about 25 years now, right?
27.
27 years. Have tastes changed?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
I mean, even when we first opened, I scarcely ever made any kind of soups with cream in them. Nobody wants cream of mushroom soup. When I make soup and I make mushroom soup, it's the complete opposite of cream of mushroom soup. It's mushrooms in a clear broth that's very light and very thin. It's not this kind of gloopy. I mean, people remember Campbell's cream of mushroom soup as kids. It's very, very different. There's clearly a lot more vegetarians and vegans in the world now. Gluten-free dining has become, you know, pervasive. So both to make it easier for diners and for my own staff, we annotate the entire menu as to what is gluten-free naturally, what cannot be made gluten-free, or what could be made gluten-free with a slight modification. For instance, if you take out the crouton made out of bread in a French onion soup and just put the cheese on top, then you have gluten-free onion soup.
And that works.
And, you know, there's a tremendous number of people who, and I have a chapter in the book about this. You know, people walk in and you can see they have a great degree of trepidation because they go, you know, I'm gluten-free and I don't know if I'm going to be able to eat anything here.
Yeah.
And then I have to tell them that most of the menu is gluten-free naturally, because if you eat grilled or sautéed shrimp or meat or fish and you have potatoes and vegetables, it's gluten-free, not because I did anything special, just because it's gluten-free that way.
Right. But I mean, at some level, if you have celiac and it's severe,
right,
you can't even be eating from the same kitchen, right?
I don't think there are too many people. I mean, for instance, we now have a vegan black bean burger on the menu. You know, when I first opened up, we just had beef burgers. And I tried vegetarian burgers a couple times, and
It's a tough proposition to make a good one.
Well, this is very different. It's served on a corn tortilla. It has a tomatillo salsa, sort of a traditional red salsa, and guacamole on top. A lot of flavor. It's very interesting. We sell a ton of them. And, you know, it's not deprivation to eat. It's actually fun to eat. So
right. It's tastes good.
Right, absolutely.
And that's the main thing. But, I mean, what have you learned about cooking for those special requests,
you know,
over the years?
I think one of the hallmarks of the restaurant is that we accommodate all sorts of people. I have a good customer who was read the riot act about eating any kind of dairy or meat,
yeah,
because he had a heart issue. And so, I mean, when he comes, he wants to eat, you know, no fat, no butter, no dairy, no meat. And
is there anything left?
Well, fish, you know, fish with vegetables, basically, is what he eats.
Yeah.
And so...
Is that Alan? Are you talking about Alan?
No, I'm actually not talking about Alan.
Okay, all right.
But
enough.
He's almost as nutty as Alan.
We'll cut that out. Oh, it's a live show. We can't do that. Chef Michael Ballin is our guest. Let's go to the phones. Lou in Mechanicville. Lou, you're on.
Hi, Lou.
Oh, you got a bad connection there, Lou. Are you on a cell phone?
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's good. Stand on a phone book or something.
Yeah. So, Michael, my question is to extend a previous caller's question a little further regarding wild game and things like rabbit, grouse, pheasant, venison, wild-caught fish. Is it possible to serve this to the public from private contributors, or is that something that is not?
I'm not an expert on that, but I'm pretty sure the short answer is no. It has to be USDA inspected. So, for instance, I have bought rabbit from someone who has them slaughtered in a USDA facility. And that's the real sticking point here there's a lot of people who either catch things wild or...
Sure.
But if the economics of satisfying the USDA are severe. And I know there's someone in Columbia County are hopefully building a USDA facility that's going to be able to process locally raised pig and some other things. But in the meantime, it's very difficult to do that.
Huh.
I see. Oh, that's unfortunate. Oh, well. Well, thank you.
Thanks,
Appreciate
Lou.
That.
Chef Ballin, are there too many regulations nowadays?
Maybe not. I mean, if you look at the meat that's being produced by the, quote, officially approved sources.
Yeah.
I mean, there's E. coli, there's animals being processed in these horrible conditions, these feedlots that are in just awful conditions. So I have a hard time believing that meat is safer than the meat grown by friends of mine who have small organic farms where they're really on top of the situation. Whereas compared to, I mean, you know, Cargill is killing God knows how many animals a day in these huge meat and Iowa beef processors. They're just gigantic.
Our guest today is Chef Michael Ballin. His book is A Chef's Life, Farm to Table Cooking in the Berkshires. You can always see Chef Ballin at Castle Street Cafe in Great Barrington. Let's go back to the phones. Tris in Hurley. Tris, you're on.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Instead of babysitting my onions for French onion soup on the stove, can I just pile them in a roasting pan, plop a chicken on top, and use those instead?
I've never done that, but I don't see why that wouldn't work. You might want to stir them every once in a while, but you're sort of creating your own self-basted onions with chicken schmaltz. Sounds pretty good to me.
Okay, all right, because I have my own broth. I just thought instead of on the stovetop, that would be good.
Yes,
thank
I think
so
that'd, that'd be fine.
Call.
Thanks for calling, Tris. Have a great weekend. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday. Ray Graff here with Chef Michael Ballin. What's your what gadgets do you use in the kitchen nowadays?
I don't use a lot of gadgets.
Really? You're not a high tech?
No. Matter of fact, that's the subject of one of my essays in the book, is that, you know, there are chefs which do use a lot of high tech. There's this whole sous vide form of cooking, which is sealing food in these, hermetically sealing food in plastic bags and poaching them at very low temperatures.
Yeah.
That's very expensive professional restaurant equipment,
yep.
Which I do not use. I think that for the most part, the way we cook and eat really hasn't changed that much in a long time. You basically either want to, you know, poach something in liquid, you want to grill it on a fire, you want to saute it in a pan. A food processor I do use, and that's a great boon. But other than that, I don't think you need a lot of, the notion that people need to have expensive equipment to cook well.
Doesn't it help those who are not too good at it?
I mean, I think of my grandmother who had this tiny, tiny little kitchen and no restaurant equipment whatsoever and did everything by hand, and she was a hell of a cook. All the grandmothers of the world who made great food did pretty well with that expensive equipment.
He makes a point. He's Chef Michael Ballin. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's a Food Friday. We'll hit the home stretch in a moment.
Support for WMC comes from Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork, vivafreshpasta.com. Gloriosa & Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts, planning and catering weddings, showers, reunions, and other gatherings, indoors or out, at the Curtis House, with 3 rooms available, or at a variety of venues around the area, gloriosaco.com. And Hudson Wine Merchants, a wine and spirits boutique in the heart of Hudson, New York. Curbside service and delivery available. Hudson Wine Merchants, raise your glass. HudsonWines.com.
Vox Pop Food Friday. Chef Michael Ballin of Castle Street Cafe is here. Ray Graff also, 800-348-2551. All right. Look, you said that the truffles are easy to make, and I just had a chocolate truffle during a break. There is no way a mere mortal makes this thing.
How old are your kids, Ray?
Which ones? Well, we got a 6, an 8, a 10, a 12, a 15,
the whole tribe.
Yeah.
The 8 and the 10-year-olds can definitely make this.
No way.
Absolutely.
I couldn't do it, dude.
Well, they're obviously smarter.
Well, all right. He makes a point. Another point for Michael Ballin. Let's go to Sean in West Hurley. Sean, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good.
So before, you were talking about gadgets and then also oysters, and I have a gadget that I purchased which makes opening oysters extremely fast and safe. I found it online. It's called the Aw Shucks machine. And you put the oyster in the back way, and you just have a blade on it, on a big handle, and it pops the hinge in the back. And then you can just take a clam knife and clean the oyster, and makes it extremely safe. And also, you could do about a dozen oysters in about 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
So what does a machine like that cost?
It was about $120.
Wow.
It's just a big stainless steel arm with a blade on it, and then it has a stainless steel stop on it. You put the oyster in there, and you then pop the hinge, and then you can just clean the top shell, the shell off, and leave the meat in the bottom.
Right.
And it also doesn't prevent you from losing all the liquid, because you put the bottom side down, so you get to keep all the liquid in the bottom side of the shell. It's a fantastic machine. Well worth every penny.
You eat a lot of oysters, Sean?
Yeah, you have to spend that money, right?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely.
Good for you, man. Well, thanks for the call, Sean. Well, I mean, it's a lot of money to spend for a device that opens oysters.
Well, it depends how many oysters you eat.
If you eat 10 or 12 a day, I suppose it's worth it. The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Chef Michael Ballin is our guest. The book is A Chef's Life, Farm-to-Table Cooking in the Berkshires. And, you know, we said in the intro, it's not really a cookbook, but there are some great recipes, and I'm looking at one now. Braised pork with black beans and cumin seed. In praise of braising, is this?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite techniques. I tell the story of one of my first restaurant jobs in New York. When I would come up with a new dish, the guy who was my boss would just have one question for me. Is it juicy? And juiciness, to me, is a really highly prized quality of food.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people think that grilling is sort of their preferred technique of cooking and eating. And I like grilled food, but grilled food doesn't involve any sauce, doesn't involve any liquid. What's nice about braising is, for one thing, it's a very forgiving way of cooking. In other words, if you overcook a steak, you have a dried out steak.
Right.
Braised pork like that can simmer for hours, and there's enough liquid in it that if you forget about it for half an hour, nothing's really going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's just going to make it tender. And, you know, in many ways, the cuts of meat, which are the least expensive, require the most amount of cooking. So that, you know, a steak or filet mignon is the expensive cuts of beef. They cook quickly.
Right.
But beef stew is a cheap cut of beef. They take a long time to cook, but when they do cook, the muscle breaks down, becomes very tender, and I'm really fond of, you know, ossobuco or braised lamb shanks or coq au vin, those sort of long, slow cooked things in liquid, which actually it's the seafood dish that we made today is kind of the seafood version of that. It's not fish, not shrimp sautéed or shrimp grilled on a grill, you know, shrimp on a barbie. It's shrimp cooked in liquor with wine and tomato and garlic and saffron, and it just develops all those great flavors.
And, you know, at home, and obviously we don't have a lot of gadgets, but one thing we do have is the crock pot.
I think a crock pot makes great food.
It's great. I mean, you can literally throw something in and yet to fail. That's the thing about the crock pot. I suppose if you tried to, I'm sure you could fail.
No, but it preserves liquid and keeps things moist, and I think those are all great virtues.
We had a couple of crazy guys on here who did a book on pressure cooking, and I've never had a pressure cooker, but that looks like another interesting option.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Emily in Plainfield. Emily, you're on.
Hello, Ray and Chef Ballin. I'm holding in my hand a printout from 2002 of a Valentine's Day recipe that I got from Michael Ballin, WAMC, that I love, and it's called Thai Soup for Valentine's Day. Do you remember this one?
I remember the Thai soup. I don't remember the Valentine's, but actually, it's got seafood and vegetables in it, right?
Well, yeah, but you make this broth. You do an onion in oil with some ginger and garlic, and then you put a whole bunch of chopped coriander, chopped basil, and chopped mint, and the grated zest of an orange, and you steep it like tea.
Right, right.
And it just makes this amazing broth. And then you cook some veggies, and you throw, maybe you cook some noodles separately and some shrimp in there, and it makes like this wonderful Asian noodle bowl. I love this recipe.
Wow, that sounds great.
And, you know, the thing about that, too, which makes it sort of suitable Valentine's Day thing. You can make that broth ahead of time.
Absolutely.
And then when it's time to actually serve dinner, to cook some vegetables or fish or chicken, and that doesn't take a long time. And, you know, it's got all those Thai ingredients are very tantalizing. That combination of spices are very vibrant. And to me, that's what's ideal for Valentine's Day.
Well, I've never seen anything like it anywhere else, and it's a great recipe. I still have it.
Oh, my gosh.
And your restaurant is kind of a destination celebration spot for us when we're in that part of town. So it's great to hear you on the radio again.
Right.
Hey,
you.
Emily, I tell you what, since that recipe's so good, you'll have to come on next week and bring it. What do you think?
if you say so.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and have a great weekend. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, 1-800-348-2551. So what's on the menu at the Castle Street Cafe right now, Chef?
Right now, actually, it's kind of a throwback because I like to do things that are, you know, it's like fashion. If you wait long enough, fat ties will be in again or out again.
Right.
Short dressing. So we're serving schnitzel with spatzel, which
You're
is
kidding
the kind
me.
Of old-fashioned food.
Oh,
that
my grandmother made them.
Yeah. We're serving a filet of sole with a actually, I can buy now these shredded Brussels sprouts with kale that make a great slaw mix. So we're serving sauteed filet of sole with shredded Brussels sprouts and kale. We've got sauteed shrimp with soba noodles and Asian spices.
That's pretty good. That's
actually, pretty good. Brussels sprouts are one of those vegetables that have had this huge renaissance right now.
It's funny, you know, a couple of my sisters-in-law love Brussels sprouts. Every holiday, we have Brussels sprouts. Never a fan.
You know, I put them on a couple weeks ago, and they're flying out the door like hotcakes.
You're kidding me.
You know, there's a huge seller.
Well, maybe the fat ties will come back after all.
I think so. You just got to wait.
Our guest today is Chef Michael Ballin, and the number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Back to the phones we go. And Megan in Massachusetts. Megan, you're on.
Hi. Thank you. I was just listening. I tuned in a little late, so I don't know if this was covered or not, but my children are 13 and 15, and they have very different tastes, and I was just wondering if you had any kind of suggestions about kid-friendly...
Don't say chicken nuggets.
No,
I'll throw you out of here.
No, I was just about to react to that and not say that. I'm actually opposed to the idea that the only thing we can feed kids is either burgers or chicken nuggets.
Right.
So I don't know exactly what your kids like to eat, but I'm pretty sure that there's something that would be homemade and delicious that, and I don't know whether that would be lasagna or eggplant parmesan or pot roast or, I mean, we were making braised short ribs at the restaurant now. They're
super, those are wonderful.
Really tender and just really delicious. So I think there's, I mean,
when I make chicken tenders, it's like with panko and all my own stuff. So
it's the real thing.
But maybe they'd also like chicken braised slowly in wine, and all the alcohol cooks out, so there's no danger of them consuming that. But
going to sleep early for the night.
Right. maybe they like shrimp cocktail. I make a great tomato and smoked Gouda soup. So it's kind of like cream of tomato soup, but it has the smoky flavor of smoked Gouda, and it's very rich. I mean, that and some bread and a salad is an incredible meal.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
Megan, do your kids like meatloaf? My kids don't.
They get cranky about it. You know,
that's
it's
so
like
funny.
What about stir fry? Think they like that kind of stuff?
Well, one doesn't.
That's a problem. And the more kids you have, the more you get that. Well, two kids like this,
three
don't like
that. Have one of your kids have a sleepover one night.
I see.
Yeah, that's called party size pizza night.
Yeah, good job. Hey, Megan, thanks for the call. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the meatloaf thing is funny because when I grew up, my grandmother or my mother, whatever, made meatloaf. It was a big, great day, and I was excited.
And we served meatloaf at the restaurant. It's one of the big sellers because, you know, there are a lot of things that it seems like you should be able to get a good version of, but you can't. I mean, you really can't go to most diners or most places and get decent meatloaf. It's not very good.
Yeah, but or a good Salisbury steak. Also, that's tricky. You need somebody good to make one.
We're using real grass-fed beef, and it's prepared well and served with real homemade mashed potatoes, not the powdered fake stuff.
Yeah.
And you can tell the difference.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's just a taste thing. It's like two of the kids like them, three of the kids don't like. And how could you not like meatloaf?
Well, then you're into cooking different meals with different kids to satisfy everybody. That gets complicated.
Oh, good Lord. Welcome to my world. Let's go to Rob in Massachusetts. Rob, you're on with Chef Michael Ballin.
Wonderful. I have a comment. I wanted to make sure that your show is obviously showing that Michael Ballin is a great chef. I also wanted to point out that he is a great supporter of live music.
And that's
at the Castle Street Cafe, and he is... Well, it's just wonderful that all the performers you get to play there.
Rob, are you looking for a job there?
He already has one.
Oh, he has one. Okay. Good job. What kind of music do you play, Rob?
You can ask Michael about that. Rob, he's
Rob is one of the most talented guitar players, singers, keyboard players, entertainers par excellence.
Really?
Yes, he is a man of many talents.
So what kind of music, though?
He is Duke Ellington, Paul McCartney, James Taylor, rolled into one.
So he's perfect for a Castle Street Cafe, a bar mitzvah, or whatever.
And great music. He'll be there, not tonight, but actually going to be there Sunday night.
All right.
Yep.
Hey, Rob, tune up, and we'll see you there.
You got it.
Thanks a lot. So you have how many days a week do you have live music?
Every Friday and Saturday. And, you know, again, that's another chapter in the book. When you tell people that you're serving locally raised chicken and lettuce, everyone says, oh, that's really great. And then when you tell someone that you're serving, that you have local music and local musicians, most people go, oh, they're just local musicians. Rob, who is a local music teacher, you know, I have one group which is the local high school music teachers. And when I tell people that we have the local high school music teachers, they think, well, that's not going to be very exciting. These guys are phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
These guys are.
And they're looking to party.
They're just, the level of musical talent is so high. There's so few places for people to play. And as we talked about the need for people to connect with cooking and eating well, you know, one of the things that happens with the predominance of electronic devices is that people don't experience live music anymore because it's all on this little gadget in their hand.
Yeah.
But the experience of going out and hearing and being in a room with other people and just feeling that energy and just the excitement and people like Rob do that just so amazingly well.
Well, I got to say, you're doing a good thing because the life of a local musician, it's tough. You gotta be hustling to get gigs, and it's not easy to do. And so you're doing a good thing.
And we feed them as well because, as I like to say, we don't like the starving musicians to be too starving.
No, don't feed them too much before the gig, though. Afterwards, you know, and then you can be sure they're playing well. You know, it's funny. You brought up devices, and we got a couple minutes left here. If you want to call 800-348-2551. Everywhere you go, there's somebody staring into a device. Does it drive you crazy as someone who runs a restaurant and just seeing it all over?
It does. And again, there's a chapter in the book about this. You know, restaurateurs go to great lengths to create mood and atmosphere by having the right lighting and flowers and music and great food. And I can't tell you how many times I walk out into the dining room and I see a couple, both of whom are face into the phone. And I have to say, would you put your phone down?
Do you do that?
All the time.
Really?
Yes.
And does anybody get up and say, well, you know what? To heck with you. I'm out of here.
I haven't had that happen too much yet, actually. Most people get shamed.
They should be, though.
Yes.
I mean, shouldn't you enjoy, especially you got the music on, you got some nice food, some ambiance.
Including your fearless leader.
Does he have his device out?
And Roselle as well.
Well, you know, he brings it in for the show, for the roundtable, but he's reading the letter, so he's got to have it, so I let it slide.
No, but there's a whole generation of people growing up who, you know, when people walk in, you see, they walk in the restaurant, they take off their coats, and they put their phone down as if they couldn't possibly have dinner without, it's not enough to even be in your pocket, it's got to be on the top of the table, ready to be interacted with. And I would say the vast majority of people are incapable of getting through a meal without phone fiddle. And, you know, if you can't just relax, enjoy dinner, and have a conversation, I think human beings have lost a tremendous deal.
And what does that say about the future of humanity?
It's frightening.
Yeah. Well, at least people still like to eat.
Well, I don't think it's actually... one of the guys who's a tech founder, who's made a fortune in some kind of tech business, decided his new business was eating took too much time and cooking took too much time. So he developed some scientifically balanced liquid that he could just drink a can
of heavens.
And never have to cook
so
anymore.
So it's like the Jetsons. You take a pill.
Or Soylent Green. I mean,
well, you're not serving Soylent Green this week, are you?
No, but we're not serving that. But I think for some people that's the future.
Wow. I got to tell you, any chef who brings up Soylent Green is all right in my book. Chef Ballin, so great to have you here. The book is A Chef's Life, Farm-to-Table Cooking in the Berkshires. Just to be clear, Castle Street Cafe not serving Soylent Green, this or any time. Great to have you here, and always nice to hear from people who love your restaurant during the fun drive when we give some dinners away.
Right.
And it's great to have you back here in the studio. And thanks again to everybody who called in. Support comes from Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, located in the Old Town Hall, Sunderland, Massachusetts, serving globally inspired, locally sourced cuisine. Open for dinner Tuesday through Sunday at 5. BlueHeronDining.com. Field Goods, working with Hudson Valley farmers to deliver weekly subscriptions of local produce year-round to workplaces and community locations. Support small farms and healthy eating. Field-Goods.com. And Bread and Butter, newly opened restaurant in North Amherst's Mill District, offering breakfast and lunch daily, from traditional staples to chef specialties such as duck confit hash and maple sriracha pork belly. BreadandButterAmherst.com. Thanks again to Chef Michael Ballin. Thanks to Chef Zachary Malloy, who was at the controls. Your phones were answered. Who answered the phones today? Oh, hi, it's Barb. It's Barb King. Barb King answered the phones. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein. Marshall, I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. Alan will be back in the big chair for Medical Monday on Monday. We'll see you then.